we do not only need a vaccine for the virus, but also a social vaccine, because we see that the pandemic, and especially the answer to the pandemic, causes a lot of mental distress, a lot of problems amongst youngsters.
The pandemic and its impact on young people is our focus in this episode. Just because young people are not at such a medical risk does not mean they haven't been impacted, of course. Take students, for example.
I think students have had a really tough time. And I look at our students at Sheffield and I just really feel I wish I could do more for them.
You're listening to the Pandemic Unmasked podcast, and I'm your host, Andy Clark. The podcast is produced by the British Embassy in The Hague, together with Studio Line 14. In each episode, we look at the pandemic from a different perspective and see what lessons we can learn from it for the future. Each time, we speak with an expert from the UK and from the Netherlands. So this time, the impact on youth. How has the pandemic and the response to it been affecting them? Before we hear more from our experts, though, let's first hear from some students in the Netherlands and the UK.
After a year of not being able to do anything that a 25-year-old should be able to do, sometimes you could say I have depressive complaints. I'm not depressed, but I'm definitely more depressed and anxious than I would have been if life would have gone on the way it would be supposed to be. But maybe in the end, I can definitely take a learning from it. But right now, it's definitely going with ups and downs.
Sometimes it feels hopeless and there seems to be no end to this misery, and that thought makes me feel pessimistic. On the other hand, I think I'm lucky because I can lead my life quite normally. I try to act as normal as possible and I will not let the constraints get the best of me.
Every day is kind of the same when you have to get up and do all your studying online. And you go out for like a walk or something, but then you come back home and you're basically just sat behind your desk all day.
I haven't actually seen my parents, my brother, in quite a few months, which is hard, but like, you know, it is what it is. I haven't hugged my grandma in a very long time, which is always very hard. Haven't seen friends, haven't like been out clubbing and everything, so like social life kind of dies as a result of the pandemic as a student.
The personal impact of the pandemic is that it can sometimes be very stressful, especially if you have all of your subjects online via Zoom. You don't see any people, you can't really talk to each other about how their studying is going or how they're studying for a subject or for an exam, and you can't really study together properly anymore. It's all via Zoom. So that makes it a lot more difficult, and sometimes it makes it more lonely as well, because you see a lot less people where normally you would see all of your friends every day. You're now seeing them once every month or something like that. So it's quite a big difference.
Quite a big difference indeed. To talk about the impact of the pandemic on young people, I'm joined by...
I'm Jette Bussemaker. I'm the president of the Council of Public Health and Society in the Netherlands. I'm also a professor at Leiden University on policy, science and societal impact, especially in healthcare. And I'm a former politician. I was a minister of education, culture and science and a deputy minister of healthcare, welfare and sports.
And from the UK.
So my name is Richard Bentall. I'm professor of clinical psychology at the University of Sheffield.
First off, I asked Jette Bussemaker about the impact of the pandemic on young people in the Netherlands.
It has huge consequences, and we know that among the youngsters, a lot of them are depressed, do not see a clear future anymore, have problems to create a rhythm during the day. So it has huge consequences. They are missing each other. They are missing to explore their lives, their intimacy with other people, to also to sport and to be active outside. So it has huge consequences.
Richard Bentall is the lead of a major study into the impact of COVID-19 in the UK.
It's a study which was set up at remarkable haste, actually, in the very early stages of the pandemic, which is designed to monitor the effect of the pandemic on the mental health and other aspects of the UK population. So it's not just a mental health survey, but the main core of it is mental health.
The study started with a representative sample of just over 2,000 people.
In general, we find that younger people within the adult sample are more affected by the pandemic than older people. In fact, we find a paradox, which is that the older people are, the more anxiety they have about the pandemic, but the less psychiatric symptoms they have.
The survey showed a spike in people showing symptoms for depression, anxiety and trauma during the first wave of the pandemic in the UK, rising from 20% of the population to 30%. Professor Bentall says young people were hit harder, but he says this is consistent with previous studies and shouldn't come as a surprise.
Without a doubt, the young people have been more likely to be in the badly affected group. Nobody's disputing that, and that's come through in all the studies that I've seen. So, but it should be said also that if you look at previous epidemiological work, a consistent finding across the board is that young people show higher levels of anxiety and depression. So in a way, we shouldn't be surprised that young people are showing higher levels of anxiety and depression in the pandemic.
What about the long-term impact for young people?
If we have a vaccine, we can get rid of the virus. But the depressed feelings among youngsters, they will stay with us for a long while. So they are not over when we are all vaccinated. It might have consequences for years to come yet.
There's also been a rise in the number of young people being treated for eating disorders. Doctors in Amsterdam told the national broadcaster, the NOS, that they'd seen over a third more cases than usual at the end of last year.
For example, I heard from university departments and hospital departments that eating disorders have extremely increased. And the consequences of eating disorders like anorexia is not just something that's over when the situation will be normalized in society at large.
The impact on education is also not to be underestimated. There's a real risk that the gap between children from well-off families and those from poorer backgrounds will be made even bigger by the pandemic. And as a former Dutch Minister of Education, this is something Jet Bussemaker says policymakers really need to take into account for the future.
You know, normally we know from a pandemic, it does not discriminate between people. So in a way, it sometimes stimulates more equality. But with this pandemic, because of the measures we are taking, it increases inequality. And that's something we have to think about also for the future and also about the policies to develop in the future. So, you know, now everything is concentrated on the vaccine. But in my opinion, and also in the opinion of the council, we have to think how can we compensate the unequal consequences we experience today as a result of the strategy to combat the virus.
The research in the UK has so far thrown up a nuanced picture. Although the statistics showed a spike in mental health problems during the first wave, the numbers dropped afterwards to near normal levels. Richard Bentall says there was a lot of talk of being swamped by mental health problems, but that hasn't happened.
The beginning of the pandemic, a lot of people were predicting, the term which was often used actually was a tsunami of mental health, because we'd all be confined to our homes and we'd have various troubles and we'd be feel threatened by the virus. That hasn't happened. Instead, what we've seen is, as far as we managed to analyse the data so far, which is only into the middle of last year, because it takes an awful lot of time to integrate and analyse these data, what we find is that there are winners and losers. In fact, the most common pattern is no change at all. So we find that about 60% of the population is highly resilient. They basically have taken it on the chin. They're doing fine. About a quarter, roughly speaking, are on a deteriorating trajectory. And about 10% show marked improvement. There's a small group which has, but they're only about 6%, who had very severe psychiatric symptoms at the beginning and continued throughout. But these are people, obviously, who had problems before it all started.
He says the picture is so mixed due to the nature of the pandemic and the fact that it is a collective burden.
And one thing to bear in mind is that a pandemic is what might be called a collective trauma. In other words, it's a trauma which happens to everybody. And that's very important because we know from previous research that collective traumas are far less traumatizing than individual traumas. So you're much more likely to develop serious psychiatric symptoms if, say, somebody attacks you in the street or sexually assaults you or something like that, than if you're caught up in an earthquake, for example. And, you know, this is at the earthquake end of things.
Still, clearly, people are struggling with the impact of the pandemic. So who are they?
In general, the people in the deteriorating group were much more likely to be female, much more likely to be young, much more likely to have small children at home, and much more likely to have pre-existing psychiatric disorders. So these are things which at the outset seem to, for various different reasons, which you can imagine, seem to make people vulnerable to the effects of the pandemic.
To what extent has the pandemic response failed to take into account the broader societal consequences of lockdowns and school closures? Here's Jet Bussemaker again.
Yeah, we already, from the beginning of this pandemic, we raised the questions if the measures we take to beat the virus medically are proportional. Because the focus from the beginning was very much on the medical aspect and not so much on real public health aspects, because that's much more than only the medical aspect and the disease, but also on mental health and the way it affects vulnerable groups. And already from the beginning, we as the council discussed the proportionality of the measures. And I said a couple of times, you know, we have the reproduction number of the R. And, you know, in my opinion, we should not only have the R of the reproduction of the virus, but also of the reproduction of the consequences, like the consequences for mental health or the consequences for unequal or equal opportunities in health and education.
So what should policymakers do now then, especially to make things better for young people, who, as we heard, are certainly amongst the groups worst affected?
Yeah, I think a most important thing is open schools and vocational training institutes and universities, because not only for teaching, so it's also for their mental health that's so important to have places where you can meet. The second point is create public spaces where young people can meet each other. And my third issue should be listen to them. So don't create too much of your own ideas about what should be good for them, but listen to them, what they need, and create and let them think and go create the opportunities that might help them to find a way to deal with this crisis.
Richard Bentall says measures should be put in place by policymakers to make sure there's a deeper understanding of the impact of the pandemic.
I think we should have some kind of post-COVID think tank, or not necessarily, you know, there should be some way in which we can get people like myself, but there are many people working on this, academics who've been studying the pandemic and its effects, how we can come together and form a clear view of exactly what's happened in terms of the way that population's been affected. That strikes me as it wouldn't cost a lot of money and it would be a very vital thing to do in terms of being prepared for the next one, because there will probably be a next one. And if it's not a pandemic, it'll be some other type of, you know, crisis of some sort.
Another pointer for the future is to be very aware of the way the vaccinations are being rolled out and possible extra privileges the vaccinated may then have. This could have a negative impact on youth, says Jet Bussemaker.
that is an issue that should be discussed much more, in my opinion, than it is nowadays, because the vaccine strategy is directed towards the most vulnerable for the virus. That means people, the elderly. If you start working with a vaccine passport, then they will have the opportunity to move around, but not the young people. So that is, in my opinion, one of the very important points to discuss in the next weeks. So do we want to have a passport for all of us, or do we want to have a strategy with more testing? Or do we accept also that when we have reached a certain amount of vaccination, that we should just create more opportunities for the young generation, since they are not so vulnerable for the virus, to move around and to travel again? And I think this is still an unsolved issue.
In the end, we will simply have to accept a certain amount of risk, she says.
I think to a certain amount, we also have to learn to live with risks in society. We do not live in a riskless society, we sometimes think. So the question is, what kind of risks do you accept? Because if you do not accept them, you create more harm. This should be a public discussion. And that's the kind of discussion I'm missing a little bit in the Netherlands. Of course, I think we all know there might come another pandemic, or there might be other risks in the future. And especially for young people who are not that vulnerable for the virus, I would say we have to discuss what kind of risks we can take in a responsible way.
Experimenting with creating public spaces where people can meet and having controlled events and looking at ways of expanding social bubbles are some of the things she says should be taken into account. At the beginning of the podcast, we heard some students talking about the impact of the pandemic on their personal lives. Of course, it's also affected their studies too.
Hi, my name is Frederik. I'm 24 years old and I study educational sciences in Leiden. The impact that the pandemic has had on my study is that I feel less motivated in general. Learning behind a screen is less interesting than following the lectures in real life. I miss the interaction with the other students and the teachers, especially the last few months when I followed a minor called child abuse and neglect. And because of the emotionally heavy content, I missed the physical education even more.
I find that COVID has impacted my study a lot, especially as a student that goes into labs. It means that those lessons haven't been able to go forward. So there's quite a loss of practical elements to my study that would have been helpful, especially going into like placements next year or work in a laboratory.
Each time in the podcast, we ask our guests to share a personal experience which has encapsulated the pandemic for them. Yet Bussemakers echoes the words of the students we just heard.
So my own daughter, she's 20 years old, she's studying, but she's in a kind of bubble in a student house with other students, and she is comparatively doing well. But one of my PhD students, she had to really to start. So she had to create, to be engaged with the others. And that was very, very difficult. And so one of them also already decided not to continue the PhD study, because after half a year, she felt lonely. She felt distressed. And of course, I can try to support them and all my students and PhD students. But especially for the people who has to start something new, and especially if it's related, it's a creative process, then it's very, very difficult in these times.
I ask Richard Bentall for a personal reflection which encapsulates the pandemic for him.
I've been trying to think of this, and it's difficult. And I think because I've been extraordinarily lucky, I have had a very good pandemic. I'm a winner without a shadow of doubt. I've seen more of my kids, and I've loved that. It's been great. And my stepkids, I think it's really helped my relationship with my stepkids. We I mean, we have a lovely relationship. And, you know, my wife and I were just talking about how much we'd enjoyed spending more time together. So I've done well. And perhaps that's coloured a bit in the way I'm thinking about interpreting my data, because I think other people haven't really focused, really noted the positives as well as the negatives.
And what about the issue of fake news? We also like to ask our guests each time about that. How has fake news impacted things? For Jet Bussemaker, as someone trying to challenge the current discussion on the way the pandemic is being tackled, it doesn't make things easy. She says people are often afraid to suggest alternatives to current policies due to the fear of being labelled as siding with the pandemic deniers or conspiracy theorists.
For me, I'm sometimes critical against the policies of the government, but I want to be sure not to be part of the wrong party, I would say, because I'm not conspiracy. I don't want to deny that the virus is dangerous. And that makes it even more difficult if there is so much fake news. It's very easy to create a kind of opposition between the people who believe in conspiracy theories and who are not taken seriously. And if you do not believe in conspiracy, then you have to accept for 100% the policies to fight the virus. And there should be more in between.
Richard Bentall is angered by fake news. He even calls conspiracy theories a health threat.
Somebody died on my street of COVID. There's a neighbour of mine, a really nice chap across the road. He is, I think, mid-40s. He's had long COVID for months. Okay. People are being seriously hurt by this pandemic. And to see people who have no medical training, no scientific training, that's universally the case of these people, actually, basically come on the media and tell you that it's no worse than flu. And then when they're proven wrong, continuing to say the same things is I find it quite heartbreaking, actually. And I do wonder about the psychology of people like that. You know, what is it which would lead you to be so arrogant, frankly?
Back to our theme this time around, then, on the impact of the pandemic on youth and how best to move forward. Some final thoughts.
A lot of young people also are resilient, but not all of them will be. So not only the individuals should be resilient, but we should also think about a resilient society where we can help support people who might experience long-term problems and not only accept that all of them will be resilient. At the same time, I know among young people, we should not see them as, we should not make them victims. So we should also be careful to talk too much about only their problems, because we also know that most of them will be resilient, they will be happy again and will flourish as soon as there are much more possibilities to meet each other. But we should also take care of the people who can't and who will have long-term problems.
When it comes to tackling mental health issues in general, the policymakers need to take a broad view, says Richard Bentall.
The interesting thing about mental health is everybody thinks about mental health in terms of therapy and treatments of that sort, you know, drugs maybe and stuff like that. But that's not the best way to think about it. The overwhelming drivers of mental health are things in the world, things which happen to us. So we need to examine those things and when we need to address those. A good mental health intervention is something which will change some aspects of the world. It won't even look like a mental health intervention. And it will change the world in such a way that people are less likely to develop mental health difficulties.
And specifically for tailoring measures to help young people, a dialogue is crucial, he adds.
A really important thing to do is actually talk to them. Ask them. Now, I've seen talk of basically extending the term time in, you know, with the idea of young people catching up. I'm not convinced that's a good idea. I think what will happen is at the very time when they're finally allowed to mix with their friends, you're telling them we've got to go to school more. I don't think that's likely to have a good impact. But I don't know. I'm not a young person. We should ask young people. We need to think of some way of kind of supporting them in the years ahead, those who've lost out on education. I think that might be a task for the universities in particular, because you're thinking about the, you know, the final school year. Those children will be less prepared for going to universities. And, you know, what I wonder what kind of additional support could be provided to kids. But of course, we shouldn't forget the ones who don't go to university as well.
You've been listening to the Pandemic Unmasked podcast, produced by the British Embassy in The Hague and Studio Line 14. Our guests today were Jet Bussemaker, the president for the Council for Public Health and Society in the Netherlands. She's also a professor at Leiden University on policy science and societal impact, with a special focus on healthcare. And she's also a former Dutch Minister of Education, Science and Culture. Our second speaker was Richard Bentall. He is a professor of clinical psychology at the University of Sheffield in the UK, and he leads an extensive study into the impact of COVID-19 in the UK. He's also collaborating with European partners working with the same methodology in a number of European countries. We'd love to generate discussion on the ideas you've heard in the podcast, so please share it in your network. And if you want to react to anything you've heard, then get in touch. Find us on social media under UK in NL, UK in NL. All opinions expressed in the Pandemic Unmasked podcast are those of the guests themselves and do not necessarily reflect the position of the UK government. From me, Andy Clark, thanks for listening.